We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're listening to KC Sports Network, which is proudly presented by M-Prize Bank. Coming up, the latest episode of Our Stories with Marlia Campbell. Our Stories is an interview-style show focused on influential women in sports with ties to Kansas City and our teams. Don't forget to hit that follow button so you don't miss anything from the fastest-growing sports media network in Kansas City. With more than 25 shows each week, KCSN has something for everyone. And now, let's go to Marlia for the latest episode of Our Stories.
Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of Our Stories, a KCSN podcast presented by our friends at Holiday Distillery. Super glad you're here with us for a very special episode. We have Andrea Hootie here, UConn women's basketball strength and conditioning coach. Coach, thank you so much. We were talking before the show. This is a chaotic time of year, and I appreciate you taking the time to join us here on KC Sports Network.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's always nice to be back in the Kansas City area.
Yeah. I've told a couple of people this week that we are having you on the show, and everyone was like, oh my God, that's awesome. So super excited for your time. A lot we want to get to today, but first, catch us up with where you're at right now and kind of how the season's been going over in Connecticut.
Yeah. I don't know our record. I believe we have two losses right now. It's been, you know, a battle of trying to keep people healthy and win games. And I started my PhD here at UConn. I wanted to grow. And so I work with the Corey Stringer Institute. That's where I'm a student. And then I work with the Institute of Sports Medicine. And a lot of collaboration on sports science, applied sports science, and anything you can think of, you know?
Yeah. That's cool. So Dr. Hootie coming here soon.
Well, I don't know about that.
That's awesome. So last time we talked, I knew you'd gone back to UConn, obviously, but I had no idea you were working on your doctorate there.
Yeah, I want to grow. I want to continue to grow. And it was, I'm getting older in the profession. This is, I'll be going on year 29, I believe, of coaching.
Wow.
And, you know, young coaches look for mentorship, but older coaches need mentorship too.
Yeah. That's awesome. So great segue into what we're going to get started talking about with your 29 years. Obviously, folks around here know you for your time with KU men's basketball. What was it? A decade? Decade and change?
It was 15 years.
15. Yeah. Awesome. So what brought you to Kansas?
Well, that was when, so I worked for UConn before I came to Kansas. I worked with both the men's and women's basketball teams. And, you know, the athletic director that was here, Lou Perkins, invited me to come to Kansas and be a part of that team of Jayhawks. And that was one of the best experiences of my life.
Yeah. So I know you're from the Connecticut area. Was there any hesitation, you know, hopping on a plane and coming to the middle of the country?
Yes and no. Because I had known some people, that were in the athletic department, but, I'm one to always try to grow and push my own boundaries and be uncomfortable. And comfort doesn't sit well with me. So I'm always looking for something that comfort that doesn't feel good for me.
Yeah, I imagine that's a good trait to have as a strength coach.
Yeah. Comfort's uncomfortable for me. So always trying to grow and have new experiences and continue to learn from anyone.
Yeah. So what was the hiring process like in getting to Kansas? Because obviously few women, you know, if you look at this NCAA numbers in coaching period in on the men's side of things, but I imagine that number is even more narrow for your specialty.
Yeah. I had some pretty great success working for two Hall of Fame coaches here in Gino Auriemma and Jim Calhoun. And I had won or been a part of 5 national championships with women's basketball and 2 with men's basketball at the time and 1 with men's soccer. So it was just being a part of a championship culture within the athletic department and knowing what it takes to win and the dedication, discipline, accountability and team effort on all levels of sports within the athletic department. So that was important. And having the experience with the administration of Lou Perkins, and moving it to Kansas, that was a great opportunity.
Yeah. So did you know you wanted to specialize in basketball specifically early on in your career? Because I know you did a bunch of different sports at UConn originally.
Yeah, basketball was the sport that I loved growing up. And, you know, what motivates me now is I've already had my knee replaced at 47. Mm-hmm. And I just don't want any athlete, let alone women's athletes, to experience what I've gone through. And that was a big motivator for me because it's like, yeah, how can we prevent these injuries or reduce the risk of injury? And help people reach their goals. So Coach Auriemma, my mom saved recruiting letters from him from like 1987. So we go back a really long time. And I did not play basketball in college. I played volleyball. And it was just a different, volleyball was a different way to produce power because I couldn't break playing basketball. So I had to kind of give that up because I had a knee injury at the time. And I want overall health for people and performance. And how can we walk that line, you know, because it's a thin line.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I'm 2 shoulder surgeries deep and I'm how many years removed now from 4 or 5 years from my college career. And it bothers me every day. So I can appreciate the value behind, I guess, providing lifelong health for these athletes. We're going to talk about specialization earlier on because I'm sure that plays a part in this. But I want to talk about your early years at Kansas and kind of how that adjustment was going in and establishing yourself in a new state, in a new program with a highly touted men's basketball team.
Yeah, it took a little bit. I would say it usually takes 2 to 4 years to probably have a true impact on some place and build a culture. Coach Self and Lou supported everything that I did and let me do my job. And that's creating, you know, tissue density and robustness through weight training and, other aspects of sports performance. So creating efficiency and health, overall health, and trying to teach younger athletes what's really important. And you know, again, I'm studying my PhD right now and it's hard to pinpoint anything.
Yeah, I was gonna say, give us the secret right now if you know.
Yeah, it's so dynamic, right? There are so many systems involved, so it's tough. But I think, you know, I got it took a little bit to for people to understand what I wanted as, you know, a director of a big weight room. And, and I'm still going through that here because I've been here for 18 months now and I still want more, you know, yeah. There's still more to do.
Yeah. Yeah. What is your, if you can nail down your philosophy in the weight room to maybe a couple key points, what was that at Kansas and has it remained like consistent over the years, if that makes sense?
Yeah. My philosophy is whatever works. So what works for one person might not work for the other, but you do have to have an external resistance to create robustness and to increase tissue density to be able to survive your sport. And the difference between men's and women's, I find, is the age, because, you know, peak height velocity, which is the time that we can really have an impact on strength, for men is around 18. So it was perfect time to train men around 18, you know, because we could get really great results. They have more hormonal impact than women. And peak height velocity for women's between 12 and 14. And unfortunately, you know, I don't know if people have those resources. Especially girls, you know, why? Like, I know Ross Schwizo there at Baser Linwood. He used to be there. I don't know who's in the area that actually has a huge impact now on young women in sports, but it needs to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. How, before we hop on to more stuff at Kansas, I guess while we're on this, how can parents, coaches encourage that at that young age for women? Because I feel like strength and conditioning is something I missed for a large part of my, you know, early career until I got to college, really, is when I started, you know.
Yeah, I would tell you most women miss that. And that's having the resources to provide great coaching for younger women, 12 to 14 years old, and for it to be consistent year round, great training, you know, and that includes sleep and nutrition and so many other things. So it's all about education and having the resources to provide a great program.
Yeah. For someone like the layperson listening to this, are there any key things people should focus on in terms of, like, I know knee health is like a big issue specifically in the women's sport. Is that something you can kind of kickstart helping at that age?
Yeah. Again, tissue density is important, neuromuscular recruitment, you know, being able to pattern things the right way. When we talk about power output, you look at systemic strength. So I like a barbell. There's people that are getting away from barbells, but that you can really load up the system if you do it right, right? Load up the system to try to create a more robust athlete. And I do like the fact that hopefully people are playing multiple sports, not specializing in one, because what I see now is these athletes are coming and they're already injured. And then, unfortunately, the biggest predictor of an injury is a previous injury. So it's like, I feel like I'm juggling chainsaws, axes, feathers, and, you know, you're like, everybody's different and everybody's dealing with different injuries. And we try to work around that the best we can.
Yeah. Yeah. So I started specializing in basketball in terms of like quitting pretty much everything else except for high jump, like for fun, when I was in probably seventh grade, sixth, maybe earlier than that. How early are you seeing that now with, obviously you're at the top level of basketball period right now at UConn?
Yeah, when I ask the athletes that I'm working with now, when they started playing year-round basketball, it's since the age of five. And the research and literature that I read is that these athletes, they're having double the volume of a single sport by the time they get to college, and they don't have movement skills or variability in other areas, and that's not good. You know, I've always preached too that what we do is try to undo what basketball does to the body and just train and create less asymmetries. And it's tough because we're trying to undo what sport has done, but also increase performance. So there's a fine line between performance and health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you play that dance, you know, with the caliber of athletes you're dealing with?
Yeah,
because I feel like you have people that want to go 100% probably like all the time.
Yeah, I have these athletes are pretty amazing. They're high level. They work. They're smart. They want to be the best. And it's like working harder might not always be the case. Working smarter is the case. But we try to do both. It's tough because everybody has a different injury and. Basketball, I think basketball is a tough sport because it's a high impact sport, high deceleration, and that's not healthy. So try to everything that I know how to do to try to keep these athletes healthy.
Yeah. I want to hop back to Kansas because I grew up a KU fan during the era, like when you were there, like 2008, I was in sixth grade for the championship year. And like, my dad and I rewatched the game for like years after that. We burned it onto a DVD and it was like that level of chaos. And one of the big, I think, pillars of KU women's or KU men's basketball was kind of the development of the big men over the time from when they were 18 to when you know, you had those pillar guys, kind of their fourth and fifth year. I guess, how did you navigate that in terms of producing as many All-Americans as you did and keeping these guys healthy and building them up over, because there were one and dones over that period of time, but I feel like a lot of the success that that group had was the four-year guys that just, you know, they were unrecognizable by the time they left.
100% experience, you know, is probably the number one thing, but talent was number one.
Yeah.
Experience. And then the weight training part, you know, especially with the big men, most people are afraid to put a barbell on people's back and, or however you load somebody up, you know, and I think basketball players are not very different than defensive backs in football. So you have to build tissue strength or tissue density and robustness. I keep saying those words, but I feel like we're getting further and further away from that in a performance community. We worked and we worked hard. And, you know, the Morris twins helped me come up with my current philosophy or the current way I do things. And that's, we lift all year round. It's not hard. It's a gradual build, and it usually takes, you know, a year for somebody to really understand what we're trying to do and then start speaking the language and understanding what we're doing. So you could see that after their freshman year, you know, again, it's hard. It's really hard when you have a high school athlete walk into a high level and you're supposed to compete with that. You know, you have to be really special if you're a freshman and you're playing college basketball, or, you know, you're a rookie in the NBA or WNBA and you get thrown into the system because you don't know the system, you know, and it usually takes a while for somebody to figure that out or to get the ball under their belt.
How did the Morris twins specifically help you to kind of?
Well, I don't think they had much experience in performance training, and they're great. So I don't think, too, athletes don't know how to work hard, you know, so we have to teach them how to work hard. And some people tolerate it better than others. And it just got to a point with those guys where I was like, we're going to do something every day, and we're going to be a gradual build, and we won't overdo it, which we hope we never overdo it, but let's just buy into this. And I remember we lost, I believe it was their freshman year or sophomore year to Michigan State in the Elite Eight, I believe. And I got a text, we were sitting on the bus, and I got a text from the twins in the back and said, who do you start now? So that was really cool because they bought into what we were trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah. When you say teaching people to work hard, is a lot of that mental, I imagine?
Trusting the process, having a load on your back or throwing a load around. A lot of people aren't comfortable with it and they don't have the experience with it. So it's gotta be a slow process for sure.
How much of strength training, I guess, in your position is like building trust of players and I guess building that buy-in kind of culture in the weight room?
Yeah, I think all of it is, because I feel like our profession is based on trust and relationships. So I hope that every athlete that I've ever worked with, from men's basketball to cross country to tennis to whatever, understands that I cared.
You're listening to the fastest growing sports media network in Kansas City, KC Sports Network. We'll be back right after this.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
Did you, being a woman in a male-dominated field, did you ever run into like any uphill battles because
every
of that?
Every day. No, every day. But again, I like being uncomfortable, and I don't know. I'm into education. My parents and family were educators and teachers, and that's it, again, it's a slow grind. Getting people to, the biggest compliment that I ever had was when somebody said, I hated exercise. Now I love it. And you know, that happens quite often, which is cool, because that means that I'm having an impact.
Yeah. How do you deal with the frustration that comes with being the top at your job, but like facing this barrier from the beginning, just because you're a woman in a male dominated kind of arena?
Yeah, it's tough because it's like, I don't know if there are too many people that could match my resume and what I've done in the university setting.
Yeah.
I run into those obstacles every day, and coming back to school and getting my PhD, will that, you know, influence other people's decisions more? Hopefully, but this, unfortunately, the first thing they see is a woman. And, you know, I just did a project with a class I was in, and it was the data's from the U.S. Census Bureau. And in 2020, women made 82 cents on the dollar that men do. But when I started, it was 71 cents.
And yeah.
I actually have this thing here that I calculated, right?
That's awesome. Yeah.
It. So it's without compounding interest, I've lost over $1.5 million over the 28 years that I've been coaching just because I'm a woman.
Oh, my God. That's sobering when you do the math like that. Yeah.
Over 28 years, you know, of an hourly rate.
Yeah.
It's frustrating, but I'm still comfortable trying to push that barrier.
Yeah. Well, and break it down for others. I think these conversations came up a lot this last year with the 50th anniversary of Title IX, kind of brought like a resurgence of that conversation. How do you, for people watching this or listening to this who get discouraged by that, what mindset do you take when dealing with this? And also, have you noticed it grow since you started in your career, you know, 3 decades ago?
What mindset do I take? I just keep fighting, you know, what I've always been taught, to just keep fighting and keep fighting for what's right and have integrity with what you do. Again, you can't control what other people do or say, so you got to ignore that noise. And then what was the second question?
Have you noticed it grow over your 30 years? Like, how have you kind of...
You still don't see very many women in those high level performance areas. You really don't, especially, you know, the only difference between men's and women's sports is the money, right?
Yeah.
And who's making, you know, who's deciding what's on TV and what's not on TV, because you can see the ratings with women's sports when they're on TV. The women's Final Four for volleyball just showcased the other day on ESPN, and it was great. It was unbelievable. Yeah. And there were great support. I don't know what the viewership was at this point, but, you know, it's there, and you just got to show it. I mean, you look at the World Cup, like, I don't know. It's like soccer isn't shown that much in the United States, but when it's the World Cup, it's on TV all the time. So people are making decisions on what to show. And unfortunately, that's, you know, what's dictating how much money goes where.
Yeah, it's a case of build it and they'll come. Like, the softball ratings were fantastic. I think it was 1 or 2 years ago. I wrote my master's thesis actually on this like specific topic, and it's the chicken or the egg thing that drives me nuts, because the decisions of not airing women's sports or giving them less primetime slots come from people care about it less. But why do you think they don't know about it as much? Because it's not
right
ESPN and in the primetime spots. Yeah, I could hop on a soapbox and go on about that forever. But
we have athletes on our team right now that they're making a lot of money with the NIL stuff, and a lot more money than some of the men athletes that I see, because there's support there, and I wish it was shown more, or there was more viewership opportunity.
Yeah. And it's certainly improving, but that's been kind of the theme for me. For I've done a couple Title IX projects now, and it's been embracing like how far we've come while using this as another little launching pad to highlight how much farther we have to go still.
Yeah. Steph Curry makes like $48 million a year, I think. And then the top women's NBA players, they make, I think, $215,000. It's like a fraction of a percent of what these guys are making. And it's like, so talk about equity, right?
Was there like a conscious decision for you to go from KU men's basketball to, I know you stopped in Texas and then came to UConn. Did you want to get back into women's basketball, or was this, that just kind of how your career took you?
I was actually offered an NBA job at the time. And again, I wanted to grow and make the decisions that I want to make and study what I want to study. hopefully those opportunities may come up in the future, but I'm really happy with where I am right now. And again, working on my PhD, I never thought I'd do that ever. But the people that I'm doing that with are pretty amazing. And the Corey Stringer Institute is, you know, one of the best kind of overall sports medicine things out there. And I'm a student in that. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Is there anything like, is there a narrow focus you're taking in that study? I'm just curious.
Well, right now I'm studying and I'm collecting data, and hopefully I'll have 3 or 4 years data of load management for women's basketball with force production in a vertical jump, balance scores. I'm working with biomedical engineers on asymmetrical walking to pick up lower extremity injuries. So you can maybe rehab the lower extremity injuries when you get that with asymmetrical walking on two separate treadmills. One's faster than the other. I work with, the Corey Stringer Institute with our load management numbers. We're working with the Institute of Sports Med to look at what we can do to have some maybe injury prevention or decrease the opportunity for injuries to happen. But again, I think I just need a little bit more time to wrap my head around what we know and what we don't know. And we know we don't know more than we know. But the load management, we use catapult load monitoring to look at a lot of stuff. And it's fascinating because I just have to make sure that I can present that information to a guy who's won 11 national championships and he's a Hall of Fame coach, which is hard, right?
Yeah.
So working on my communication skills too. So have you ever heard of Tableau? It's a software that it's data management and data visualization. So it's pretty cool. I'm excited.
I didn't even think about the coaches, I imagine, are interested in that, but I don't know how easy that would be to
bolt on
new tricks kind of thing.
Right? It's it's good. It's good.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I want to take a little bit of time here before we have to let you go, because I know a lot of KU fans are listening to this, to just talk about maybe some of your best memories from Kansas and kind of some key moments, maybe behind the scene things folks didn't know about. Is there a couple, you know, handful of moments that you remember as highlights? I imagine 2008 might have been one of them, but.
Yeah. You know, winning is really, really important, especially in sports. It's really important, but you can't win without great people. And the people that were there and you surround yourself with, and working with the coaches that I did, and having the support from the administration to build the sports performance department was fun. Those are the things that I remember, the personal ones, right? Not necessarily, you know, the team accomplishments. I think it's the little battles every day that's what sticks with me. You know, again, winning is really important. I always brag about being part of the 14 Big 12 championships in a row, because that's unheard of.
That was
fun.
Yeah. Are there is there an athlete or two that you feel the most proud of, I guess, for their growth over their time in your program?
I would say most of them, right? Yeah. I just actually had a conversation with Julian Wright. I think he left in 2007 or 2007, where, you know, he reached out to me on social media and we're going to try to connect. And that was 16 years ago. So, you know, they just had a big Title IX thing here for women in sports. And I probably saw 40 different athletes that I worked with 25 years ago. And, you know, the stories that they tell. And I think it's about the stories and the relationships and the communication at my time at Kansas, because it's a special place, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So do you maintain relationships with a lot of your former players and that kind of thing?
Yeah. Even Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi, they're, you know, arguably two of the best women's basketball players in the history of women's basketball. And we communicate all the time. So I talk to the Morris twins. I keep contact with a lot of people. So.
Yeah. When's the last time you were back in Lawrence? Have you made out there? You're a little busy during basketball season, but.
Yeah, I think I came back to Lawrence for Christmas of 2019.
Okay. Yeah. So,
yeah, that was fun.
Oh, and I didn't even ask, did you watch the national championship this year?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Where were you for that?
I was at home in Connecticut.
Because would any of those guys have been, did you coach any of the seniors when they were?
I think Mitch was the
winner. Well, that makes sense.
I had Jalen Wilson for summer.
Yeah.
I think that was probably it.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking back on Kansas, I guess, what is your, what are the biggest lessons you walked away with? Maybe the biggest, reflections you are able to have over your decade and a half there?
Personally, biggest reflections?
Yeah. Just sure.
Keep fighting and keep fighting for what you believe in. And, it's sports are hard and winning is tough. And a lot of people take winning for granted. It's not easy. And, you know, again, the relationships and the people that I've met along the way made me a better person. And I just think it's growth. It's building.
Yeah. Yeah. And then one of the last questions I have for you, and I'll probably have a couple more after this, but or maybe the young women who are listening to this, who are interested in going into your specific profession or just in general, a field where maybe women aren't the majority of people who work there, your advice and suggestions?
Yeah, I would say take your path, because there's not one path, right? So be you, take your path and be the coach you want to be or be the person you want to be and be unapologetic for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that last bit. Yeah, that's awesome.
Because you're not going to change people's views if they're not willing to be open to it.
Yeah, yeah. Did you get how were KU fans? Were they receptive of you when you were hired and stuff, or was that?
I don't know. It took a while, I know, to make your mark. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, needless to say, I mean, you left, again, the 14 conference championships, dozens of All-Americans, a national championship at UConn now. Wish you the best of luck this season. Before I let you go really quick, the story or the show is called Our Stories. If there's one message people walk away with from your story, what would you want that to be?
Know who you are, right? That would be the story, is knowing who you are, having your set of core values and understanding growth is, you don't. I use the Romans 5:3-5, and it's, let me see. It's right here. I have it. So it basically says that suffering produces perseverance, and perseverance produces character and hope. And you just keep plugging forward, right? You just keep fighting your fight.
Yeah. So,
and you have, everybody's got their own fight and everybody's got their own suffering. So we just kind of got to grow.
Yeah. I love that. That's a beautiful note for us to end on. I know, again, you're super busy, Coach. Thank you for taking the time to do this. And best of luck the rest of the season. Look forward to watching you guys.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard and think others would as well. You can find all six of our channels at KCSN, covering the Chiefs, the Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou, by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.